Okay, so we're diving into some pretty intense territory today, folks. The kind of stuff that really makes you think about where the lines get drawn between protest, you know, standing up for what you believe in, and actually breaking the law.
Yeah, it's a tricky area, especially when you bring in the whole context of military installations, national security, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So we're going to be looking at a really specific case today, set against the backdrop of a pretty major controversy, the U.S. Navy's training exercises on VX Island, Puerto Rico, back in 2000.
Right. A lot of tension there, a lot of local opposition to what the Navy was doing, concerns about the environment, you know, potential health impacts, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, and this is where our main character, Raul Maxwell Anthony, comes in. He was a big part of that opposition, but not just through, like, signing petitions or giving speeches.
No, this guy was all about direct action.
Yeah, repeatedly entering Camp Garcia, which was an active Navy base very clearly marked as off-limits restricted area.
Not just stumbling in by accident either. Very deliberate acts of protest.
Oh, absolutely. Knowing the risks and taking them anyway. And eventually, June 13th, 2000, he gets arrested.
But here's the thing. He didn't get caught, like sneaking around in the middle of the night, nothing like that.
How'd they get him then?
He walked right up to a guard and asked for some water. Boom. Arrested for trespassing.
Wow. Talk about a bold move. So that's the setup, right? The context for this whole legal battle we're going to untangle. The case is United States versus Maxwell Anthony.
Big question here. Did these unauthorized entries, because there's no doubt he wasn't supposed to be there, did they actually constitute a federal crime?
Under a very specific law, 18 U.S.C. section 1382. And could Maxwell Anthony's reasons for doing what he did, his belief that he had to stop the Navy's activities, could that be a legitimate legal defense? We're talking necessity, appealing to international law, the whole bit.
Buckle up, folks, because we're about to find out.
So let's break down this 18 U.S.C. section 1382. What does it actually say? What did the prosecution have to prove to get a conviction?
Okay, so it basically boils down to two key things. One, you can't enter a military installation for any purpose that's specifically prohibited.
Right. So not just wandering onto a base by mistake, it has to be against the rules.
Right. It's got to be unauthorized and in violation of some regulation. And two, the person who enters has to know, or should reasonably know, that they're not allowed to be there. No accidental trespassing.
So they have to be aware they're breaking the rules. Makes sense.
Now, in Maxwell Anthony's case, the case went through the courts in a pretty typical way. First, a bench trial in the district court, meaning just a judge, no jury.
And what was the verdict there?
Guilty. So he appeals to the First Circuit, hoping a panel of judges will see things differently.
So one of the first big arguments was about that purpose element of the statute, right? What exactly did it mean to enter for a prohibited purpose?
Right. In the district court, their take was pretty straightforward. They said, look, the Navy regulations clearly forbid unauthorized entry, period.
So just by being there without permission, Maxwell Anthony had already fulfilled that prohibited purpose element.
Exactly. He trespassed. That was the prohibited purpose.
But Maxwell Anthony, he's got a different perspective. He's not denying he entered the base illegally. His argument on appeal is all about his motivations, his underlying purpose.
Right. He's saying, hey, my goal wasn't just to break a rule for the sake of breaking it. I was trying to stop what I believed was serious environmental damage.
So it's not just about trespassing. It's about preventing a greater harm. That's his argument.
And this is where the First Circuit really lays down the law, clarifying how to interpret this statute. They agree with the district court, saying the purpose is all about the intent to enter without permission. It doesn't matter what you plan to do once you're there or why you feel you have to be there.
So the focus is purely on that initial act of crossing the line, not on the reasons behind it.
Precisely. And they make this crystal clear with a quote from their ruling. They say, unauthorized entry itself can constitute the prohibited purpose.
So even if your heart's in the right place, even if you're trying to do something good, breaking that rule is still the focus.
It's about conduct, the actual action, not your internal motivations, however noble they may seem.
Makes you wonder, though, how does this all play with something like the necessity defense? That's a classic legal argument, right?
Yeah.
Saying, yeah, I broke the law, but I had to prevent something worse.
Right. So Maxwell Anthony, he leans heavily on this defense. He's saying, look, my trespass was justified because it was necessary to stop the Navy's exercises and the harm he believed they were causing.
So how does a court decide if a necessity defense is valid? What are the rules?
Okay, it's a four-part test, and it's not easy to pass. First, you got to show you were faced with a choice between two bad options, and you chose the lesser evil.
Like caught between a rock and a hard place, and you pick the rock, so to speak.
Exactly. Second, the threat you're trying to avoid, it has to be imminent, like right now, not some vague future possibility.
So no hypothetical harm. It has to be a clear and present danger.
Right. Third, your actions, they have to be directly connected to stopping that harm.
Mm.
There has to be a clear cause and effect relationship.
You can't just say, well, I did this thing and maybe it helped a little. It has to be a pretty direct link.
Precisely. And finally, and this is huge, especially in protest cases, you got to prove there were no other legal options available to you.
So you couldn't have achieved your goal without breaking the law. That's a pretty tough one.
It is. So how did Maxwell Anthony measure up against these requirements?
Yeah, did he clear that four-part hurdle?
The First Circuit said, nope, not even close.
Hmm.
One of his big arguments was about the dangers of nuclear submarines, right?
But
the court, they said those concerns, while maybe valid down the line, weren't an immediate, imminent threat at the time of his trespass.
So the right now factor wasn't there. What about the connection between his trespass and actually stopping the Navy's activities?
The court said, look, just being on the base didn't directly stop anything. It wasn't like his presence physically halted the exercises or prevented environmental damage right then and there.
So that direct link, the cause and effect, was missing.
Yep. And then, the big one, were there other legal options? The court pointed out all sorts of things Maxwell Anthony could have done. Lobbying politicians, protesting legally outside the base, you know, public awareness campaigns.
So they're basically saying, look, you had other options, you didn't have to break the law.
Exactly. Now, here's a subtle point that's really important. The First Circuit, they didn't say the necessity defense could never apply in these cases. They actually, just for the sake of argument, assumed it could work.
So they're leaving the door open a crack, but just a crack.
Right. Their rejection of Maxwell Anthony's defense was all about the specific facts of his case. He just didn't meet those strict requirements.
So the takeaway is, yeah, the necessity defense exists, but it's a really high bar to clear.
And especially in a case like this, involving a military base, national security, the courts are going to be extra careful.
Now, Maxwell Anthony, he also tries another angle, right?
Yeah.
He brings in international law.
Yeah, the Nuremberg principles. These are basically guidelines that came out of the trials after World War II.
Defining war crimes, holding individuals accountable for those really horrific acts.
Right. So Maxwell Anthony's argument is the Navy's exercises, they violate these principles. Therefore, he has a moral and maybe even legal duty to intervene.
So he's appealing to a higher authority, essentially.
Exactly. Saying his obligation to international law trumps his obligation to U.S. law in this specific instance.
Bold strategy. Did it work?
The First Circuit shut that down pretty hard. They said, look, the Nuremberg principles, they mostly apply to governments, not individuals.
So it's about how countries behave on the world stage, not what individual citizens can do within their own country.
Right. And they also pointed out that U.S. law in this case wasn't forcing Maxwell Anthony to violate international law. It was just telling him he couldn't trespass on a military base.
So there was no direct conflict between the two, no situation where he was forced to choose one law over the other.
Precisely. So, big takeaway here. International law is hugely important, but you can't just use it as a get-out-of-jail-free card for breaking domestic laws.
Okay, so stepping back, big picture time. What does this whole Maxwell Anthony case really mean? What kind of impact did it have?
It really sets a precedent, a standard, for how these kinds of cases involving protest and trespass, especially on military property, are going to be viewed.
So what's the message to activists, to folks who are thinking of taking direct action like this?
Be very careful and know the law. If you trespass, the courts are going to focus on whether you knew you weren't allowed to be there, not so much on your reasons for doing it.
So your motives, however pure or well-intentioned, won't necessarily protect you from the legal consequences.
Right. And that necessity defense, it's a long shot, especially in these sensitive situations.
It makes you think, right? Does this approach, where motive is downplayed, does it discourage legitimate protest? Or is it a necessary balance, protecting national security while still allowing for dissent?
Yeah, it's a tough question. On the one hand, you have the need to keep military bases secure, to let them operate without interference. On the other hand, you have freedom of speech, the right to challenge the government, even when it's uncomfortable.
So where do you draw the line? That's the real debate.
Absolutely. Okay, so wrapping up for our listeners, let's summarize the key points from United States versus Maxwell Anthony.
Yeah, what are the big takeaways here?
First, when it comes to this specific law about entering military bases, your purpose is all about whether you meant to be there without permission. Your motivations are secondary.
Second, the necessity defense. It's a possibility, but it's incredibly hard to prove. You need rock-solid evidence of an immediate threat, a direct link between your actions and preventing that threat, and absolutely no other legal options.
And third, international law. It's not a free pass to break domestic laws. It mostly applies to governments, not individuals.
So this whole case, it really raises a lot of questions, right? Should the law consider motives more seriously, especially in protest cases? What about that necessity defense? When should it apply? These are all things worth thinking about.
For folks who want to dive even deeper into this stuff, there are other cases out there that tackle similar issues. United States versus Schoon is a good one to check out. Also about the necessity defense in protest.
You know, this whole case, it's a reminder that individual action, the law, and these big societal issues, they all intersect in some really complicated ways. We've got individual conscience, freedom of speech, national security, environmental concerns, all colliding.
And there's no easy answer, no simple solution. It's a balancing act, and this case just gives us a glimpse into how complex that balancing act really is.
Absolutely. So we hope this deep dive has given everyone some food for thought. Thanks for joining us.
Until next time.